Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Welcome to Double Helix. Like tempered steel glowing in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet was that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the poet we are today. Welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry that we are made of. I'm Afasiana, and with me, I have Daniel Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Faze. How's it going today?
It's been a little bit of a day. I was late for work because I slept through my alarm, and then I went to a doctor's appointment 2 weeks early because, you know, just
okay.
They were like, why are you here? it's just, I don't know. I've been making the silliest mistakes. And then that opening was not what I was expecting. Are you playing a prank on me?
That was not me. I was expecting more than just the clapping. I was like, is this a John Cage composition? What's going on here with the, you know?
I thought maybe you changed up the song, but
No, I don't know what happened. It was I'm not sure what happened. I was expecting the music too, but yeah, it's you know that. So I'm gonna get overly spiritual here. I swear on my life that sleeping resets the planet for people, because when I wake up, if I wake up and I like roll over and drop my phone or something, that's like my whole day. And the only way I can fix it is take a nap, and then it like resets the world. It just happens every time, I swear. So yes, if you start the day off like that, that's like your day. You have to go and meditate or sleep on it to change it. So, well, you know what? We're going to make up for it all tonight. We're going to have a great time. And everything's going to – that was our one little faux pas was the music. Everything else is going to go very smooth tonight, I promise.
I agree. And we have an exciting contest. So do you want to talk a little bit about this contest that you held?
We do. And I posted the artist's website on the board. I'm probably not pronouncing her name right, but she's going to give us a SoundCloud in a minute and pronounce it correctly. Noemina Prada. She's an artist, mostly a photographer, but she does have some art as well, too. And I actually was following her on different websites, on Instagram and mostly on LinkedIn, and she posted some really interesting things. And there was one picture of the ocean that really struck me. And so I wrote a poem about it, and I said, you know what, why not just reach out to the artist and share it? So I sent the poem, and I said, hey, I just want to let you know I wrote a poem about this. It really inspired me. And she responded back. And I said, do you mind if I actually take your picture and post it with my poetry? You know, no money involved, just something to promote, and I'll give you, you know, obviously full promotion of your painting, and she agreed. So we had a little bit of a collaboration there, which I was very honored to do. And then I thought, you know what, she would actually be a really good contest since she was, you know, open to poetry. So I reached out and asked her if we could do this contest, and she agreed. She was excited for it. So I came up with it, and she's been a little bit involved. We're going to listen to a SoundCloud in a minute again about that she's going to kind of describe herself a little bit and her experience and her art. And for everybody that I reached out to that okayed it, I actually sent your poems to the artist. So she actually was reading has read the poem, the poetry. Yeah, she was trying to call in tonight, but she was not able to, unfortunately. But you know, she did read all the poetry and was very, very excited about it and thought everything was beautiful. And It's great to have a collaboration like that, where different art forms and different people are coming together just to celebrate art and poetry and music and the great things of life. And I also, Afaziana, love the international feel of this show. I never thought about it before, but I was thinking, she's in Portugal, I'm in Boston, Massachusetts, you're on the west coast of Canada, is that correct?
Yeah.
So just the three of us are covering like 10,000 miles, which is very interesting to me. So anyway, very excited to do that. We had a good turnout for the poems. And what I think we should do is start off with the artist's SoundCloud. So
all
if
right.
we could play that, and she can kind of introduce herself and talk a little bit about herself.
Okay, here it is.
Hello. Good evening or good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you are. My name is Noemia Prada. It's quite difficult to pronounce it because it has too many vowels. I'm from Portugal. I have a very strong accent because I didn't learn English with a native speaker, so I have a strong Portuguese accent, but I believe you can understand me. I hope you're having a nice time. Don't know what you're doing, but I hope you're having a nice time and having a good day. And entering a little bit in the Christmas spirit, and I hope your life is going well. If not, just be patient. Eventually, things will get better. I'm going to talk a little bit about me and a little bit about my work. I'm not the most talented person to talk, but I will make an effort. Basically, I'm a self-taught photographer, painter. My academic background is in journalism and advertisement, but I did many things during my career, during my life. I taught Portuguese. I did several painting exhibitions. I worked in the computer field. I did covers, drawings for books. I wrote articles. I wrote for newspapers. So I have quite a very varied background in artistic terms. I hope I'm not being very boring, because I wouldn't like that. I hope you are interested in what I have to say. About my latest work. My latest work is seascapes. I do seascapes because I live near the sea and I love to photograph the sky. I love to compose the image, giving relevance to the sky, and it's always nice to have a human figure to compose the story in the photo. The photo needs to tell a story or to convey an emotion. So my photos of the sea need to have this human element that gives it strength. About my hands project. I love hands. I love black and white. My photography is mostly black and white. It's like 99% black and white. And the hands are powerful. They are everything to me because they communicate. They talk with each other, they talk with you, they can express all sorts of feelings. They can express sadness, anger, joy, tenderness, violence. Hands really tell things, they show things. And we In Portugal, for instance, we talk a lot with our hands. Hands are part of our communication. And the way I want to portray my hands is for them to create an emotion. So I do hands, black hands, white hands, old hands, newborn hands of old people. My most successful photos are the hands of my father, who had a very hard life, and his hands are very, very hard and strong and powerful also. Finally, I think I should make this short because I've been talking for quite a while. My painting is very eclectic. I'm an abstract painter, but I also do flowers and watercolors, either painting, either photography, either writing. Everything for me is about creation, being creative. I like to produce art. So I define myself as an artist, and I hope you enjoy my work. It's a pleasure to be in this show, if you can call it like this, in this event that is happening, and I really hope that you enjoyed my career, my personal story. I would have to spend a lot more time, and I don't think we have that time. Again, I apologize for this Portuguese accent, but at least you will know how someone from Portugal speaks English. And I wish you the very best, hopefully a very nice month in December. Don't buy too much. And if you can, buy art and support artists, because it's not really easy to live from art unless you have a very famous name. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Kind regards, Noémia Prada.
Thank you so much, Noémia, for that. What a beautiful, humble, spiritual person she seems to be. And her website is www.noemiaprada.com. That's NoemiaPrada.com. Everybody should go check out her website that's listening and see all of her fantastic photos. First of all, I love her Portuguese accent. I think it sounds fantastic, and we could talk to you. And she sounded great, so you sounded great, Noémia. She has some books out, if anybody's interested in that, as well as her art. And I will want to thank her because that SoundCloud was exclusive just for this show. So she recorded that just for us to play here, which I thought was, we were very honored to have that. I love how she talked about the sea, and she always has that human element with the sea, which I thought was really great. How she also always wants to tell stories with her art. Hands being very powerful, I liked how she said that and how it's everything to her. And again, those hands really talk and can tell stories. I mean, hands are one of the most powerful and complex things in the universe that we know of, and I think we take them for granted. So I think that was really great for her to concentrate on that. But yeah, thank you again, Noémia, for that great SoundCloud. What were your thoughts on what she said, Faziana?
I agree with you about the giving, including a person when she's doing her seaside photos. That giving it context is really cool. I like that she does storytelling. I think her accent is beautiful too. I really enjoy her art. You can tell that she's trying to tell a story with it. Our first picture that people are going to write to is the face very close up looking at someone's eye. And I think that makes you wonder about what this person is thinking. So it's very good potential for storytelling and for the poetry that we're going to hear tonight.
Absolutely. So I think we should we get started.
I agree. So I'm going to start with Beyond You by S. Sharp. There is more here than meets the eye. Half of me pushes onto your screen, soaked in the sweat of determination. I look to you, for you, yet feel abandoned. Another side of me is calm, content, confident. I will be okay. There is life ahead of me, beyond you, and that is why I am sweating this out. End Paul.
Great read there. And I'm going to try as best I can to highlight where everybody's from. So Scott is from California. So again, we are all over the place here. And I thought this was very beautiful. And our biggest response was to this one painting of a photo. I think that is the photo is actually of the artist, of Noemi. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it might be her. It kind of looks like her, but I wasn't 100% sure. And I got out of this the same thing that Scott did, where as I was looking at the photo and why I added it on the contest was it was, to me, there was so much to the photo. It wasn't just one emotion. You could really see lots of different things on here, and that's, I think, what Scott was getting out of this, where there's more here than meets the eye. Half of me pushes on your screen, soaked in determination, yet they feel abandoned, like they're also calm, confident, and content. And then they're also sweating this out, and that's Scott kind of combined all of that as again, this, you know, the person in the photo has this so much to that look and so much to the emotion coming out of it. You can read lots of differences in there. And I really like how Scott also saw a story in this, which is something that the artist does, right? So he found a story in the painting, in the photo, excuse me, of this person kind of looking at it as a, you know, as a relationship that they're speaking to someone else. So I like how Scott kind of found the story in that, in the face and in the eyes and in the look of the photo. So yeah, great job, Scott. What are your thoughts of Faziani? You read it beautifully. What did you think for our first poem?
I like that he used the fact that you can only see half of the face in the photo and makes you wonder about that other half to show that there's kind of a divide there. Determination was a key word in the poem, and I can definitely see where he would get that because the eye in the photo definitely has that determined kind of look. Maybe it's partly the placement of the brow, but there's just something about it where I expect this person to be super strong, strong-willed. I had originally thought her face was wet because of the ocean, just because she has so many pictures by the water, but I like considering it sweat. That works with the whole determination theme. So very interesting how he put that together, and he has very short lines, and it really just lets you focus on what there is. I like that it starts with there is more, and then you want to know what more there is, and then ending with why it's being sweated out. I thought that it was really great. Start and ending to make you think about everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, Scott puts a lot into a small amount of words. I'm definitely a fan of his. He's really great at just so much with so little. Something I wish I could do better. I know you read a lot of my poetry, and sometimes it goes on and on. So I have to learn more from Scott. We have a new one up, and I'm guessing you're going to ask me to read it.
I am.
All right. Well, I would be happy to. So this is to the same prompt. This is by Opti, who I'm not sure where Opti is from, but it is called Bai. You didn't say when you walked away. You didn't say goodbye. You didn't talk. You let me be. I still see you. I'm not free of you. You pierced my heart when you just stared at me. And now I don't love you anymore. End poem. So a lot in this, and what I liked about it, I don't know if this is Opti's idea. I can take this both ways. I can take this that Opti is looking at this person and talking to that person, as it says, just stared at me and now you don't love me anymore. Because again, he's seeing this, you know, the photograph, it was so well done that it you can see the, you know, so many different emotions in it and take it different ways. It's almost like if you look at the Mona Lisa, you can look at it at different angles and see kind of different things. You can look at this and see different things out of it. And so I see it as Opti looking at this and saying this to this person, but I can also take it as the person in the photo thinking the same thing as they're looking. And like Scott's poem, I really like that Opti found a story in here, found an emotion and a feeling from the actual photo. So I thought it was beautiful and a really great composition with this that Opti did. So this is a lot of fun. And I like the rhyme too. It was a different kind of rhyming. It was almost like, to me, it almost felt like free verse, but there was rhyme in there as well too. So I thought he did a great job with that as another brevity. So awesome job, Opti. What's going through your mind, Afasiana? That always interests me.
I agree that this is another person who is really great at being succinct. Opti can do that well. I am not a succinct person myself. I'm like you. Longer to get to my thought. And I really liked the lines, you pierced my heart when you just stared at me. And that stare in the image, I could see would be heart-piercing. So that's a good capturing of the photo there.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that as well, too. In the photo, the eyes, the look on it is very piercing, so I think Opti captured that beautifully. I've been trying to write a lot more brevities. I actually have a whole almost book of brevities now that I've been writing, but sometimes I'll sit there and I'll come back and I'm like, this was 600 words. How did that happen? I didn't realize
not
I was,
a brevity
I was
anymore.
Doing it. Not a brevity anymore. I don't know how that, it's like a half a novel now. I don't know how that happened, but sometimes it just keeps going, and I'm like, all right, what's the word limit on this contest I'm entering? It's sometimes it just gets out of control. So I've been trying to, and these guys did a great job. So yeah, what do you want to do now?
Okay, I'm going to read one by Felon. And we've been saying where people are from. She is from the southern United States.
Excellent.
Here you go, Felon. Fighting Self-Disparity by Felon. Retaining weight along the mandible invokes elementary traits. Poverty hulls tones that shadow malnutrition. Creases that fold desperation in being seen as a man. Thinned insecurities, bites nips of flesh silencing the inner boy. Follicles incite a riot beneath flared exhales to his destiny. War is a view amongst almond-shaped blinds. Passion dilates death to 3 millimeter center of black. Exerting power in a full brow stating game on. End poem.
Awesome read. Thank you very much. And yeah, one of the things on this is determination. When you look at this photo, it is, you know, there's a serious like fight in there, and a determination is certainly one of the things you can get out of that. I think she jumped on that great. Where was the line here? War is a view among almond-shaped blinds. That's really, really interesting. I think, to me, that's the way they're describing the eyes, which I thought was really, really, really interesting. Poverty hulls tones that shadow malnutrition. Now, the picture, the person has kind of almost seems like dirt on their face. So the first thing I thought was almost the person that was either in poverty and working really hard, or was just doing something that was very dirty, but you can still see the power in their face. And so I thought that was a really interesting take that Felon did as well too. And Felon has a really great way of writing, great imagery, great description, which they really did as well. I also liked Passion Dilates Death to 3 millimeter center of black. That was very interesting, and that's, to me, she's focusing right on the pupil of the eye, just that intense stare that you can get from people. You know, that stare when you're looking at somebody and you get chills, or you just get almost nervous because you can just see the intensity in their face. You know, I wish I looked this up. I was thinking about this before, and I didn't look it up. But am I wrong that the human face has the most muscles out of any part of the body? Right? There's like 30 something muscles in a face that can just create so many different looks. And that's, you know, a good actor, right? If Frank was on, he could probably talk about that. A good actor can use all those and really create different looks. So sometimes that just intense stare you can get from people can almost make you nervous, just because you can see them so intense and so, you know, ready for a fight. So that's what I was really getting out of Felon's, and I love Felon's poetry. I thought you did a fantastic job with this. I thought it was great. And you seemed to have fun reading it. What was going through that? Speaking of intensity, what was going through that intense mind of yours?
Well, Felon always writes in an intense way. I like Poverty Hull's tones that shadow malnutrition. When I first looked at the image, I thought the dark spot under the eyes kind of looks like a football player. Like, they have that, I don't even know what it is. It's like, yep, almost makeup that they wear. But then I can see how this would be looked at as like, as dirt, that would indicate poverty. And the person in the photo to me looks quite young, although you said it was the artist. So maybe she's just very youthful looking.
I'm not sure it's the artist. I wasn't 100% sure. I thought it might be, but it also could be someone else. I do agree with you there. I was thinking about that too, that it was somebody that had that determination and that look because they were, you know, playing football, meaning, you know, non-American football, right, soccer, and then had that on there. So I thought the same thing, that this could have been a sports person that, you know, was that intensity and grime and everything from playing really hard. I was thinking the same thing. Sorry,
yeah,
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. No, it's all good. You can go back and forth. I like that she took it in a poverty way, though. That could be, you know, it adds to the story. It's where her mind went, and she brought it to life. And then saying it shadows malnutrition, it does, you know, the dirt shows you your cheekbones and, like, all of, like, the fact that that the person in the photo is very thin is more evident because of that dirt. So the shadow malnutrition, it also, like, foreshadows, so that could work in different ways. Thinned insecurities bite snips of flesh, silencing the inner boy. And I kind of think that maybe the sweat on the brow can be a part of that. I really liked follicles incite a riot beneath flared exhales to destiny. Follicles incite a riot is such a great line. And then the almond-shaped blinds, which you already commented on, that's a really cool way of saying the eyes. I love that description. And then the pupil, I think you're right about talking about the pupil. Because passion does dilate the pupils. And death to 3 millimeter center. So it's like, you know, shooting daggers with your eyes, death from the center of the black. I really love the way that that was expressed. It pulls on, you know, kind of common expressions and twists them into her own way of phrasing things. That sounds really unique. Well done, Felon.
Yeah, there was a great, I think it might have been the third Rocky movie, but it's in all the Rocky movies with that, you know, the famous Eye of the Tiger song. And they show the people with that intensity is the whole thing, and that's what he's trying to get him to do. And you can definitely see that, you know, people's, you know, famously, right, if you're talking to somebody and they're attracted to you, their pupils will literally die, open up because they kind of want to see more. But I think pupils also open up for multitude of reasons. You know, if you're scared, if you're anything you're interested in, it's just your mind, your eyes want to kind of see more. So pupils can really tell a story. I agree with that. So excellent. All right. We, I think, are going to continue our little quest here tonight. And where do you want to go? You're our captain here.
We are going to sail towards Rob Azza's baby face.
All right, I'm going to take care of that. And Rob is from Manchester, New Hampshire. He's right up, so he's kind of by me. And he's actually a writer and a radio host, so he's all over the entertainment industry here. I like Rob. And this is called Babyface. More determined than admitted, less fragrant than allowed, my eyes see past you into the folds of your skin, through the disavowed dread within the wrinkles of my stare. My face is flush with damp vigor. My brow is a staple of might. Oh, I will cut through you, past you, over you, and kick at the disembodied corpses standing in my way, holding my stare, holding my rigid stench, breathing in every drop of sweat my baby face will allow. End poem. All right, so he really went for this one. He's talking about the intensity. But I do like the fact, because like you said, the woman in this looks really young. You know, she looks kind of almost like a teenager or early 20s. But, again, that intensity, I mean, he really kind of went through it. Oh, I will cut through you, past you, over you, and kick the disembodied corpses standing in my way. Now, that's some intensity right there. That's somebody that's just not stopping at anything. So he's almost seeing to me like somebody at war here that just has this look. You know, when I look at the photo, I also see kind of a smile in there too. So I think, I kind of see like somebody who's just, you know, excited and confident of where they're going. So I thought that was really, really interesting how he, you know, especially titled it Babyface and but, you know, still got that intensity, right? And, you know, it's something that we can, you know, we look at people's faces a lot. I almost think of animals sometimes, right? I mean, how many times do people look at polar bears or other bears and say, oh, they're so cute. The polar bear will rip you to shreds in 2 seconds if they had a moment to do that, right? But to us, they look all cuddly because we like stuffed animals, and to me, they look good. So, you know, it's the same thing. Like sometimes you look at people and they look all cute and they look young and baby faced and all this, but you know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. It could be the intensity, or they could look really rough and rugged and strong, and they're just, you know, little teddy bears. So I thought that was interesting how we really combined that. Again, another, I'm getting very inspired tonight by these brevities. I think I need to, I'm gonna take a challenge, and the next one I write for your show, for Sinner and Saint Faziana, I'm gonna do a brevity to see if I can do it. Hold me to that.
We'll see. You're probably gonna write 4 brevities and combine them.
I probably will end up designing something like that. I'll write a brevity and then get all twitchy and have to write like a novel afterwards because I don't feel like I wrote enough stuff. but what did you think about Rob?
I really enjoyed this. The line less flagrant than allowed made me think that it maybe is the sports scenario. You know, all the times my dad playing soccer would get yellow cards or red cards and kicked out of the game for being a little bit too flagrant. Maybe that's where it gets the name, flagrant. You know, you get that flag going of, like, you're in trouble.
There you go.
I liked, my eyes see past you into the folds of your skin. I mean, like, that is an intense stare, looking at every little detail of the person. But my favorite line, I think, is through the disavowed dread. Like, again, so intense. And then it goes back to the folds in the skin when it says, within the wrinkles of my stare. Like, I've never thought of a stare as having wrinkles. But then, you know, when you look at that stare, it is like something that would give you wrinkles because you'd flinch away. It's so intense. And then the description of damp vigor. So that kind of brings up the whole sweat factor, but in a really cool way, like damp vigor. That's a nice way of wording it. Yep. And then each line, I'm like, and this one. But my brow is a staple of might. That is awesome. And it's very strong brow. I mean, the eyebrow there, but not just the hair of it. You know, it has that, the crinkling of the brow, that look that I don't even know how to describe. I have this one cousin who, from the moment he was born, had, like, grumpy old man eyebrows. And it wasn't the hair. It's like he has, like, the bone structure there where he always looks mad. Like, from when he was a little toddler, he'd be smiling and he'd look angry.
Yes.
Adorable as a baby. I don't know if he likes it as an adult. I haven't seen him for a while. But the brow can be very expressive. My rigid stench, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing. I think that might be connected to the sweat earlier on. And then, yes, sweat becomes the next thing. And the idea that despite all this intensity, there still is that baby face. They still look young and potentially innocent beyond that intense moment. I thought this really captured the energy of the art.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. The brows can definitely do that. Do you ever see the TV show Seinfeld? And again, we're international here. I don't know how many people get Seinfeld, but there was this one thing where Jerry Seinfeld on his show, his uncle got his eyebrows burned out, and somebody drew them on, but they drew them on like he was mad, and everybody was like confronted. He's like, "Hey, how you doing? Geez, you don't have to talk to me like that." He's like, "What? I'm just saying hi. All right, calm down." Like, they just kept thinking he was yelling at him the whole time when he wasn't, just because his eyebrows were drawn in wrong. So, yeah, the brows are very very, very expressive. So I'm wondering if your little cousin, he might be getting in lots of bar fights. If everybody just thinks he's mad.
I would not be surprised. He's a pretty big, intimidating guy now, though, which I have a hard time comprehending because I moved away when he was, like, 6, and then now he's all grown up. And I'm like, how did that happen? But I can imagine him getting in some conflict.
Yeah, I have some nephews that are just turning 30, and I'm trying not to think about it, so I get you there.
I'm like, I used to, like, hold you and change your diapers. How is this possible?
Yeah, exactly. You know, whatever. Hey, listen, the way you got to think of age, I decided a long time ago, it's not how old you are. It's what level you're at. You got to think it like video games. Like, right now, I'm about to make it to level 55. So that's a good one, right? I just got to beat the boss level there, and I can move on to the next level. So, you know, you got to think about it as an accomplishment as opposed to, like, I heard a good thing today. Instead of, you know, a mirror breaking for bad luck, a mirror doesn't break, it multiplies. So you just end up with a whole bunch of more mirrors instead. That's a good thing. So it's just all the way you think about it, right? Anyway.
I like that with the mirror. I want to use that as a prompt.
Off topic, but that's okay. What else do we have here? I'm actually staring at the picture, and it's freaking me out a little bit because of the intensity. I have to stop staring at that picture. But the prompt is,
I know, with each poem, I see it as more and more intense.
But yeah, let's continue on and see what we're doing next.
Okay. I'm going to read one by Blabler, who is my co-host on Part Sinner, Part Saint. So shout out to Babbler. And this is called Cut. The half face of a young woman stares down the lens, indomitable. My youth reflects in her iris, 20 years prior, running headstrong to womanhood. I gravitate to places sharp tongues will lick with 20 grit judgment, lapping at freckles that splatter like paint across the bridge of her nose, pushing against full brow and hooded lids with a lathe, taking a router to the hint of a mustache, teasing at the edge of her mouth, patriarchal hands aching to bathe her hairless body in lacquer and declare it a work of art. But sameness is artless. Another mug cast like so many others on a shelf for 25 cents at a thrift store, glazed. My wild roughness has smoothed some, lapped at by cats lost to groupthink, but hers is still sharp, cutting. Let her take diamond to sand, sparkle in sharp angles, and make them bleed. End poem.
Awesome, awesome job. And I don't know if Babylon wants to know, but she's, do you know where she's from? I don't know if you want to say it on a, I don't know if she makes that up a public thing.
She's from Washington State. I won't be specific about her city.
Sure, sure. Oh, so she's on the West Coast as well, too. Excellent. So we are still all over the place. Yes, and I love Babbler's writing. I think she should write more. I miss it when sometimes she takes breaks with writing. But she's, you know, Babbler's is if you, I know most anybody listening to this that's not on the website can't, and that's not on All Poets, you can't see it. But Babbler's picture is also a very intense picture, and Babbler couldn't be a sweeter person. I mean, from what I know about her from listening on the radio, so she's so intelligent and so nice, but she has this kind of intense picture that she's looking at too, and I love that she relates to this. My youth reflects in her iris 20 years prior, running headstrong to womanhood. So I like that she's relating to that. And I do like the idea on here, basically of how the person in the poet in the photo is, you know, there's really no makeup on there. She's just kind of raw. She's who she is. And I really did enjoy that, but there's still a great strong beauty. I mean, a very beautiful woman in the picture, and it's just kind of that natural raw beauty that she says on there. And I think Babbler kind of hints around to, you know, how people kind of take that. But sameless as artness, another mug cast like so many others on a shelf for 25 cents at a thrift store glazed. Right? What happens when you take that rawness away and people just put the same makeup on and all try to look, you know, the same. And you know, it's something I've talked about before too, is or that I've thought about a lot, is that, you know, we are who we are. And what do we do? We hide in our own, in trying to fit in, right? We put on clothes that we think look good, but that we think will help us, you know, feel confident and fit in with where we're going. We put makeup on so that people won't see who we really are. But everybody then ends up looking kind of the same, right? I mean, you've seen it throughout history where people are, you know, stuck in the fashion and, you know, I can't believe this person's wearing this instead of this, which I never really understood. And, you know, I like how she kind of described that, as another mug cast like so many others on a shelf for 25 cents at a thrift store glazed. So I think that's really interesting. So emphasizing just the kind of raw, you know, natural beauty and strong will that the photo is. And really emphasizing that and saying, you know, go for that, be yourself. I think all of that is what I got out of Babbler's poem, which is great. I mean, she has a great way of being able to do that, really kind of, you know, telling that deeper story. So great job, Babbler. I enjoyed it a lot. And I'm glad you got to read your friend's poem. That made me happy that you got to read Babblers. So you know her fairly well, right? What do you think she was trying to say with this poem?
I agree with your assessment. You know, I think she's talking about the natural beauty and that fierce attitude of not giving in to conformity and being a bit nostalgic for having that fierceness that maybe she's given in a little bit now, and she's looking back at herself and like, remember when I refused to pluck my eyebrows or cover up my freckles or you know, do any of those things that we do based on, you know, the ideals, the, like she says, patriarchal society, aching to bathe her, like to, you know. And I know Babbler was a kid who played in the dirt and, you know, was not afraid to get muddy and to sweat and be, you know, she was a bit of a wild child. So she would see herself in this image of the strong girl that you know, resisted having to be the prim, proper, perfectly groomed at all times kind of debutante. That wasn't her, and I think that she respects that in this image, that that's not this person. The being declared a work of art after you've been, you know, made hairless and lacquered and, you know, changed to be the same. But I really like the same is artless, that focus on the beauty of the nature and the individuality. Because when I think of the glazed mug, it has been smoothed out to not have any individual things. It's just what people would do, like you said, if everyone's wearing the same style and the same makeup and they're all just trying to conform. It reminds me of the book series Pretties, or the Uglies, but Pretties is the second book, by Scott Westerfield, and it's set in the future, and everyone gets plastic surgery, like everyone. It is standard that you all get plastic surgery to look exactly the same, to match the ideals. And the uglies, in quotation marks, are the people who can't afford the surgeries, like the people in true poverty who don't have anything to spend on the surgeries that everyone else does as like a basic thing of survival. You have to all look the same. And the uglies are the people who are like us, the normal people. And then there's the pretties who have like the next level plastic surgery, and everyone looks the same, and they don't realize that there's anything weird about that until the one girl kind of finds like these magazines of like from our time and is looking at like, these were the famous people, and they don't all look the same. And they, I mean, to me, they do, but, like, you know, for them, it was different, and they discovered, like, that maybe being different wasn't so bad. So that whole series just comes up to me in this poem, and it's powerful. My favorite line, though, was, where is it? I gravitate to places sharp tongues will lick. I love that on a few different levels. So part of it is like, maybe you want to be around people who are sarcastic and, you know, have that kind of dark sense of humor. Maybe you want something with people who say it like it is, those sharp tongues. But I also see it as kind of like a masochistic thing, where you end up putting yourself in situations where people criticize you and the 20 grit judgment. You end up in these situations where someone's going to judge you. And then if you're like the girl in the picture, you resist that. You defy it. You like that there's someone criticizing you that you can tell off because you don't have to fit their conformity. That kind of looking for a fight kind of feel strikes me as old school Babbler, who is a sweetheart, but I can see back in the day her being ready to fight for her ability to her right to be whoever she is. So I don't know. I really loved this. I know I'm biased because I'm friends with her, but I loved it.
No, I really did too. I think that she, I think she did a fantastic job with this. There's so much in it, you know. And whenever I listen to your show with Babbler, you know, you guys get so deep into the poems and so much, and you guys are both so intelligent. And you can see that in Babbler's writing here. So yeah, I love this too. I thought this is one of her better poems. So great job. And a friend of mine named Darcy just texted me and said that she's actually listening to the show. So hey, Darcy, thanks for listening in. We appreciate it.
Hi, Darcy.
Where do we want to go now?
Now we have one by Pee-wee Cushion. I always want to add an H to that. Pee-wee Cushion. And would you read that for us, Dan?
I would, yeah. Yes, I have to ask Pee-wee how he actually pronounces names, because somebody pronounced it differently the other day, and I was like, ooh, is that how you pronounce Cousin? So I have to, you know, being from Boston, I don't pronounce anything right, so I say Cousin, but I'm not sure. I bet you it is a better way to pronounce it. But, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Pee-wee. He's such a nice guy. I would love to read Pee-wee's. So this is still on the same prompt, and this is called A Brand New Seeker. Pupils dilate. Blood speeds in vain, pulse and breathe, shallow and quicken, thoughts come quickly and clearly. In what could only be described as an almost violent distortion of your plasticity, you are wrenched back into this reality from the hands of the great unknown ether. Looking lost as a page plucked from the midst of a giant universal tone, gasping at first for the air which was in more than abundant supply around the seeker, and then finally settling into the new atmosphere that's and surroundings in a few quick but labored breaths. There was a gurgle and chortle as lungs acclimated themselves to the viscosity of the new atmosphere. That cannot be healthy for those poor guys, Sheena thought to herself as she made her way across the room to a vacant chair and sat herself down. I'm just surprised I haven't seen one of them go spastic or looking like a fish out of water, her second stated. Why would you say that, her quick response. I swear that sometimes it feels like you're trying to jinx us. Meanwhile, finally acclimated to the new atmosphere, they had hooked up the viewer tube to the seeker's head. They were utterly clueless to what they actually had in the seeker. The odds of finding another that was a seeker, viewer, hunter all in one were somewhat akin to that of calling for a carpenter, having Christ show up in full regalia wearing the burial shroud of Turin and bringing along a few apostles just for the help. It was then that a smile started tugging at the corners of the reptilian mouth as soon as the seeker was overtaken and rolling around on the floor laughing hysterically and gasping for breath. What's going on? Sheena bellowed. Is that thing broken? The response came sheepishly. We're not really sure, ma'am. This has never happened before. End poem. So I was just kind of conversing with Pee-wee today. He wrote a poem and sent it to me and said, hey, what do you think about this direction I'm going in? And the first thing I said to him was, you really need to write like a novel in poetry form. I said, think of Beowulf. Like, he is so – he creates these stories and it's such a great, amazing imagination. You know, for him to create this, to me it's – when Pee-wee writes stories and when I read a lot of stories, I think a lot of George Lucas. I know I'm going way off topic here, but George always said something that was really simple but really interesting to me, where he said that there is no story that has a beginning and an end. There's none. Every single story is in the middle of something that's happening, because there's always something that happened before and there's always something that's going to happen afterwards. You know, Pee-wee did a great job with this. I mean, to get this was to the same prompt, right, Faziana?
Yes, this is our last one to that first prompt.
So, you know, for him to get all of this out of just that one look of that person and create this character that told this story, I thought was just really, really amazing. What a great job that he did. And what was the line? I almost was laughing in the middle of it just because of his wording. So the odds of finding another seeker hunter, like he was creating, like just he created these characters, right? He created this whole little world, which I thought was amazing. Seeker All-in-One were somewhat akin to that of Calling for a Carpenter, having Christ show up in full regara, wearing a burial shroud of turning and bringing along a few apostles just for the help. I almost started laughing when I was reading it, but I tried not to. But yeah, great job, Pee-wee. I mean, I really enjoy his stuff, and I really want to see him, come do something even a little bit different there. By the way, we also have Akilia J, who's kind of new to allpoetry.com, that says she's been listening as well too. So we have lots of, not a lot of participants, but it sounds like we have lots of listeners today, Faziana. So we must be interesting and doing a good job reading. People are on there. It's good to hear that we actually have some sort of a some sort of an audience, right, instead of just talking to ourselves. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
So what did you think of Pee-wee's take on this?
I loved it. When I first glanced at it yesterday, I wasn't totally sure where to put it because I was sorting everyone by prompt, and he didn't say which prompt. And then I was thinking, like, there's so much to this. Like, he could have been inspired by any number of things. But that beginning, I should have known, the pupils dilate, is the start of it. Everyone's focusing on the dilating pupils, and to me,
yes.
Her pupil's not that huge, because one of the things that will bring brain damage like I am is my pupils are always, like, really big. To me, that's not, like, dilated at all, because I'm used to, like, my crazy eyes. Which people always think I'm high, but I'm not.
Yeah, sure, you're not a Faziana. You can say that, too, but no, I know. The one thing I didn't concentrate on in that picture was the pupils. I think it's, like, the only thing I didn't really notice, and it is kind of funny that everybody's concentrating that, so, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's talking about it. I mean, she has really cool eyes, but I wouldn't say her pupils are huge. But yeah, I'm kind of weird like that. So it's surprising me how many people are focused on the pupils. And then the blood speeding makes sense because when your blood pressure changes, that influences the pupils. That's partly why the pupils show, like, if someone is scared or something like that. I mean, it's evolutionary of your eyes get big so you can see if there's something moving if you're scared.
Yep.
But, you know, it's really cool. That he brought so much into this just by a picture. It really makes me want to, like, just look at a whole bunch of faces, like maybe even just Google image, like, face, look at all the different people, and then, like, make characters out of them. This is inspiring. I'm so impressed that he was able to do that, bring so much out of it. Because I'm curious about this, and I like what you said about writing a novel in poetry. You know, novels and verse are actually, like, becoming quite the thing, especially in teen literature. There are quite a few that are really successful. What's his name? Kwambi. I'm blanking on his name. There's this one author who does a whole bunch of ones that are, like, basketball players and things like that. It's, like, kind of like all the guys are reading them, but it's really cool that he can do that storytelling through poetry. I liked the part that you mentioned as well, the calling for a carpenter and having Christ show up in his full regalia. That's such a cool analogy of the using it to describe the chances of finding this. This definitely has potential to be a much larger story. I love it. And maybe the image could be like the cover of the book or something. I'd talk to the photographer. That would be so cool.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I just want to say, for if anyone else has joined recently, we're celebrating the work of artist Noemia Prada. Check out, and she's collaborating with us too. So she's been corresponding with me and collaborating with this show. So we really appreciate her her input and collaboration. Check out her website at noemiaprada.com, noemiaprada.com, and you can see all of her stuff If you buy anything or correspond with her, just mention you heard it on the show. And cool, yeah. But Huey does a great job. I mean, he's very smart, and he's it's funny. I remember when he first came on All Poetry, and I've actually been seeing him develop, and he's really becoming so imaginative, becoming just an amazing poet, one of my favorites. But finally, we've been on this one for a little while now. We're actually getting to prompt number two, I think.
That's right. So we're on the prompt two, and actually, will you describe the image? Because I don't feel like I can capture it. Tell us what prompt two is for those who can't see it.
I don't know if I can either, and I love this prompt. I thought it was different. The one that captured me, the one that I reached out to Noemia in the first place and wanted to collaborate with her, for some reason I didn't put that one on here, but I thought this was really interesting, so I'm never going to be able to capture it. But if you go on her website and look for her stuff, it's a beach scene, I believe, and if you've ever been to the beach and you see like the stone walls that they put up for the breakers, right, it's a very young child kind of standing there by himself. In the foreground is a woman or a man. I think it's a woman. I can't see in the foreground, running on the stone wall. That's the breakers. And you can see the sky. The artist, she gave a SoundCloud earlier. Those didn't hear and said she really likes the sea and the sky together. And you can kind of see the sea in the background, but you can see a great sky there. And it's, you know, a lot of the focus is really that child kind of looking at that scene of the person running. It's a very very interesting prompt, and I'm very excited to see what people wrote about it. So no way I'm doing it justice. I'm sorry, Noemi, I'm trying. But it's a beautiful, very interesting picture. So who do we have now? Who is going to – who are we going to read? And I think it's – I can't remember. It's your turn, right?
It is.
I've been up since 7 this morning. I'm tired. I can't remember even where we are already. So, yes, it's your turn. And –
I don't know what day it is, so yes. It's called Flightless, and it's by My Angels 3. Again, your stolen wings weigh heavy on my mind. Why should your life have been so brief and flightless while I throw stones after stones at the endless swamp of sorrow? My clever therapist urges me to find gratitude for the time we had, which is vacant because it's worse. When I start to feel better. Happiness is the monster under my fragile bed, where guilt lies waiting to strike, where your disapproving shadow casts subtle darkness over smiles. Dan, I'm sorry, can you try muting? I'm getting a lot of static.
Oh, sorry, probably me. Apologies.
Where healing holds hopeless hands for short hours, letting go in the long dead of night. Virtue seems sinful, each kind act tainted by tragedy, gestures empty and hollow, conscientious pursuits misplaced against sadness, all shades of love painted pale by your empty spaces. I dare not take flight when your wings never unfurled. I dare not show hope when you knew no such thing. I dare not stop mourning when all I have left is how your absence feels. Numb, my secret sweet spot, neither glad of the life before me, nor sad of the one taken, floating with storm clouds, frightened of their thunder, resigned to their rain, existing, in a sense, between what's lost and what remains, facing neither with courage, wanting both to end. Deathly gray hues hold safer views than life's color. End poem.
Awesome read, as always, Faziana. And, yeah, I apologize if there was static or typing. Proof that I am not a professional radio host. That I'm, this is still amateur hour here, so apologize.
You're
for
just
that.
Human.
Unfortunately, yes, I am. I will say that. So that was a fantastic read, though, and really, really interesting take on this. I love where she went and the thoughts that came from My Angels 3. I'm not sure where she's from. It just says United States. We've been trying to highlight where everybody's from today since we do have pretty much an international show. You know, again, Noemia from Portugal, and we have people so far from Canada, United States, and other places as well. So I do like the line, my clever therapist. I thought that was interesting to describe the therapist as clever. So Angel, you've stolen wings, weighing heavy on my mind. Now, the way I got this was, you know, I saw this photo as almost from the child's perspective and them looking out, but I almost see it as like an astral projection now, as the way Angel was thinking of, here's the person as a child, here's the person as an adult, which is kind of how I took this poem, which was really interesting. I don't know if I'm right or not, if that's what the poet was going for, but that's what I was getting out of it. Why should your life have been so brief and flightless while I throw stone after stone, this endless swamp of sorrow, which is really interesting, almost kind of looking ahead at your life. You know, I've been doing that a lot lately, you know, the past bunch of years, especially as concentrating on poetry. I think a lot, and I don't know why this one scene comes into my head, but I think a lot about, you know, when I was a child, and then kind of think ahead. So how did I get from there to here, right? There's this one scene that comes in my head all the time, and I don't know why. I was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, and we're at my house in Linfield, Massachusetts, and I was just on the side of the house, and I was there. It was a real memory, and nothing happened, but I just remember standing on the side of the house one day kind of looking around, and I don't know why. Whenever I think of myself as a kid, I think of myself as there, and I think of myself as that child, like thinking into the future for some reason, and I don't know why. I don't know if I was doing that when I was a child, but I remember distinctly standing in this one spot, and again, I kind of think of that. So when I look at this photo and I look at this poem, you know, it's kind of about almost that, you know, how you get from a child to adulthood and what kind of happens. I dare not take flight when your wings never unfurled. I dare not show hope when you knew no such thing. I dare not stop mourning when all I have left is how your absence feels. Really, really interesting of, you know, do you don't want to do things anymore because you know how much it hurts, and also, you know, maybe you don't want to, you can't do things, you can't take flight because you've never really done it before. You can't show hope because you've never really had hope before, you know, kind of, you know, showing this, talking about this life that has just gone through so much turmoil. So very, very interesting. Really, I'm not overly familiar with My Angel 3. I don't know if I've read a lot of her stuff, but I'm absolutely going to. I've just started following on here. So beautiful, beautiful job with this. And even though I cut your poem and had your reading in half, you did a fantastic reading. So what did you think when you were reading it?
I was really sad. I think this was about someone whose child died, and they're imagining that the child is watching their life. And so the little child at the front of the image, angel of, or ghost, but I think angel, of the child who died, and because that child never really got to fully experience things, the mother, who is the narrator, feels like she can't fly, as in like not willing to take the plunge into the future. She's the one running on the, whatever that is, the breaker thing, and not ready to go out into the ocean, but not willing to go back to that gravel, and kind of being stuck in the middle on this divider in between the past and the future, because it's too hard to move on without the child, but can't go backwards, so stuck there in the middle, and that the image was sort of taken as a metaphor, with the clouds looking quite stormy, and that grayscale of the picture fits what it's saying at the end, where there's something about how, oh, here, deathly gray hues hold safer views than life's color. Better to be in that fog of in-between than to have to deal with the brightness of pain. It's a very intense story, and it was beautifully worded, but I just felt heartbroken as I read it, because to me it was about the loss of a child.
Absolutely, I can see that, and that's that connection again of the child and the woman or man in the photo. Really interesting take. Definitely a fan of this poem. And we have some people on the board as well too. We have Pee Wee and Robbie is on the board. So hey guys, and Ulo the Dawn is also there. Ulo, yes, we did not get to your poem last week. We'll try this week. If we don't, I promise we'll do it next week first thing. Oh, next week or next show first thing. So we will get to it. We didn't forget you. You'll absolutely be read at some point. So yeah, we got lots of people listening again. So great. Why don't we continue on? I think we have another one for this prompt.
We do. We have one by Hats that I'm just loading up now. All right. This one's for you to read, Dan.
Excellent. And Hats, I do know she is over in England, so we are in another country now, which is great. It's called After War. The tanks disappeared from the squares and streets, specters of blood soaked into the gray cobblestones. A last runner leaves the ruins of the city, quickly disappearing into the distance. He is slowly engulfed by the fog. Crowds evaporated from the squares and streets, with them also an echo of the clear heartbeats. The spring morning stopped in a cold white day, a breath caught in the last light drift. Steps of the orphan are breaking into silence of the empty parking lots, and the breath condenses into stream. End poem. So great job, Hats. And for those of you who maybe didn't hear the beginning of the show, the artist herself sent a SoundCloud kind of describing her work. And what she said was she tries to tell a story with all of her photos. And I really like how pretty much that's been the theme. I think she must do a great job, because pretty much everybody has been finding little stories to tell about the photos, which I think is great. And very interesting that Hats, who I believe is from somewhere in Great Britain, I believe, is using this as After War. When I saw this photo, that is one of the images that came to mind was something that was war-torn. So this person that's running and this kid, you know, sometimes you do see these photos of war with these children just kind of standing in the streets by themselves. You wonder if they're orphans because of the war. And the way that she described that, I thought was really interesting. And I don't know if this is because of everything going on in Europe right now or over in Russia and Ukraine that this is coming to her mind, since she's, you know, a lot closer to that than I am. The way that she's describing this, and again, telling a story, a last runner leaves the ruins of the city, quickly disappearing, and then describing the child, steps of the orphan are breaking into silence of the empty parking lots. Really, really great descriptions here. And again, I liked where she kind of went with this story, something I thought of as well too. So awesome job as always, Hats. I really appreciate it. What do you think of Faziana? I know you got some thoughts here.
I do. I loved it. I liked that it focused on the cobblestones, because there's something really distinctive about the ground there. It's not too often that I get to see cobblestone. And then usually places near a beach are quite crowded. So the idea that this is looking kind of deserted, there's only two people visible, does seem like it would be something where something has happened, and there are those empty parking lots now. Then using it as running from the city really does bring a story to life. The running person does look intense. they could be running for their life. And then the child, you're right, it does kind of fit those images of war where I'm sure when people are doing war photos and they strategically get the angle where the child is there, because it really pulls at our hearts. You know, I'm sad to see anyone in a war situation, but when it's a child who's so innocent and has nothing to do with that, you know they're not guilty, and if anything in the war, it's just extra heartbreaking. And just seeing the child watch as someone runs away in the context of imagining this is a war-torn situation is really sad. I think the shadows and the black and white lend to that. Because sometimes the bright sunny colors and like the ocean's blue doesn't have quite the moodiness that black and white can produce. So having the engulfed in the fog really captures that the atmosphere here. The steps breaking into silence, I liked that a lot. And that last line, the breath condenses into steam. Very well done, Hats.
Absolutely. And thank goodness Pee-wee's here, because he did correct me, and I was incorrect. I looked it up. Hats is from Slovakia, so... much closer to the war, unfortunately, than we all are. So I'm sure that's probably why that's on her mind. So I hope she's safe and everything's okay over there for her. But yeah, so we are in Slovakia there. Sorry about that, Hats. Thank you, Pee-wee, for the correction. Where do we want to go now? Are we on to another prompt already?
We are. So only one person submitted for prompt 3, and prompt 3. Is a view of the ocean where it's dark at the top and it kind of goes brighter and brighter as you see the sky meet the water, and there's waves kind of breaking, and there's the sand, there's like the smooth sand and then the walked over sand that's darker and then some lighter sand, and there's a figure of a woman who is standing and looking kind of cold, the way she has, you can't see her arms, I think they're crossed over her, and she's just like a black silhouette. You can't see any details of her.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting on that picture, the silhouette, the way that she put that. She had mentioned that she likes the sea and the sky. And the way that you focus, you know, you think if you're doing an ocean picture, you would focus on the ocean, but most of the, probably, you know, 2/3 of the picture is the sky. And the person is just a silhouette, like you said, it's just black. It almost seems like it could have been drawn in there the way that it's taken, so it's very, very interesting. But yes, so we're going to read this one, and my turn, I believe.
Yes, I think it is.
All right, excellent. This is by Zara H., who is from Saudi Arabia. So we are, again, all over the world here. It's called Solitary Shadow. Colorless horizon laying breathless on the ocean's chest, as if the last minute embrace prior to fading away. The tides are reaching to the shore in a plea to save what's left. Or are they trying to connect with the only breathing epitome on its edges? Can sad things connect, even while different in nature? Can they smell each other's festering wounds? Would they save each other if that were a possibility? I believe, regardless of the soul, pain unite them all. Pain is unique, twisted, but I don't think it's evil. It's the way it was created, its nature. I guess pain itself is saddened for the things it inflicts on beings. It's altruistic in some way, though. Here facing the weeping drifts, I've met the solitary shadow of pain. End poem. What a deep poem, and I'm totally inspired by the one line there. I guess pain itself is saddened for the things it inflicts on beings. What an amazing thought that is, to think of pain as an actual entity. And, you know, I almost think of it as this kind of being flying around, and it has to inflict, you know, its only purpose in life is to inflict misery on people. And, you know, maybe it would be saddened that it couldn't do anything else, you know. Maybe, you know, pain is supposed to be a warning sign, right? If you have pain in your body, it's your body saying there's something wrong, right? So maybe it's, you know, pain is supposed to be there as a warning to help people, say, hey, you're hurt, stop doing this. But it also has to inflict, you know, hurt on people, right? So I thought that was really, really interesting where she went with this. You know, the tides are reaching the shore in a plea to save what's left. Or are they crying connect with the only breathing epitome on its edges? So describing that that person as that, you know, breathing epitome on its edges was really, really interesting as well, too. So she went very deep here, and you know, this is something, again, another brevity that I'm really going to have to study. I mean, this is something that's worth a lot more looking into, I think. So, yeah, I'm a little dumbfounded by this poem, because it's just making me think every time I read it. I'm thinking of more and more ways to explain it. So I think she did an amazing job with this. What did you think about that? I know you have all kinds of thoughts flying in your head right now, Faziana. So I can feel them all this way. So you got to tell me what's happening.
I love the way nature is described in this in such a personified way. The colorless horizon laying breathless on the ocean's chest, like the ocean rising and falling, is really could be an image of the chest breathing. And the horizon is still, so it only has the movement of the ocean keeping it going. That is such an incredible image. And then the idea of the waves reaching to the shore in a plea, as they, you know, it's amazing the way that nature is personified here. I really, really love that. And then the way that pain is personified as not a bad thing, because like you said, pain is something to warn us. You know, if something is too hot and it hurts, that means, like, don't destroy yourself by keep touching this thing that's too hot. If something's wrong, then you need to know to fix it. And the way that she does that, as if pain is altruistic, makes me think about in Sandman, which I've been watching the TV show of and read the graphic novel a long time ago. Death is surprisingly kind. You know, I was expecting death to be scary, but death is personified in it as, like, an actual woman. And she's quite comforting, you know. She goes to, say, an old man who's alone in his rocking chair, and she's like, are you ready for an adventure? And she's kind of like takes his hand and takes him on to the next stage. Or when there was a someone who was in pain, she was like, and now we're going to make you feel all better. And like, she was just so kind and like surprisingly comforting, not so much the Grim Reaper with like the big guys, you know, killing you. I mean, she did kill them, but she did it in such a comforting and well-meaning way that this depiction of pain makes me think of that. And then, again, it goes into that kind of, like, beautiful nature image of the weeping drifts. So it's like there's this sadness to the way that the ocean flows, but it's just described with such beauty. This is amazing, Zara. Very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. I've bookmarked this one because I really need to read it kind of multiple times. Like you said, every line is very inspiring. All I can think of is ideas I want to write about, so we should move on before I start.
But isn't that the mark of a good poem?
That is absolutely the mark of a good poem, when it makes me want to go write instead of read more, you know. So she did a great job.
Take notes.
Remember
what you're thinking about writing.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I will. So let's move on. What else? What are we doing now?
Okay, so now we're on to prompt 4. And the prompt 4 image is a hand that's holding 2 strawberries. And it's a very nice-looking hand. I would say a woman, or maybe a young man, but I think a woman. Not a child, but not elderly. And big, juicy, bright strawberries. With kind of a black background around the hand. Plain nails, no nail polish or fancy manicure or anything, but well maintained. Okay,
yeah,
so
and she does have a. I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say she mentioned that she has a hands project where she's very obsessed or not obsessed, but she's very interested in hands. And I wish I kind of did a different one. This is, she actually has on her website, she has a section called Red, where she's actually exploring the color of red. And that's what I took this from. But I'm glad I did have a hand on there. I kind of wish I added a 6th prompt that was just part of her hands project. So everybody should just go and kind of check that out. But that's where this came from, was actually she has a section on her website called Red, is all I wanted to say. But yeah. Where are we going? What's our first poem for that?
Okay, so we have one by Vicky. I'm going to load this up here. This is Strawberries in Winter by Vicky Moore. He finds me strawberries in winter, offering them to me like diamonds. I savor each one like the gift they are, heart-shaped, red, and juicy. Are these symbols of love? And poem.
Beautiful poem and beautiful read. And Vicky is from the United States, I believe. And I always like commenting when people put this on there. On her tag is, I know I'm not a very good poet, but I love writing. Well, you're right and you're wrong. I'm sure you're right that you love writing, but you're wrong. You are a good poet. This is a really interesting poet. Another brevity. We get a lot of brevities tonight. And I really like the symbolism of that. You know, he finds me strawberries in winter and offers them to me like diamonds. I mean, how beautiful is that line? You find me a more beautiful line in the world than that line, and you won't be able to. That's an amazing line. The strawberries in winter part, I think, is really great, you know, because you just think of, you know, strawberries is something for, you know, for during the summertime. I don't know when strawberries actually come out. I'm sorry, I should know that, I guess, but... and then I savor each one like the gifts that they are, heart-shaped, red, juicy, are these symbols of love. And I think, so I think that's a man's hand. I'm not sure is what I'm getting out of it. So I think she's, again, telling a story of her love giving her a gift. And, you know, people give gifts of food, but the thing is, it's not the strawberries, right? It's not the gift of food. It's just a gift from her love. You know, anything that they give you is something. Like, I think about that with my wife all the time where, you know, I look at things. I mean, I have so much crap in my house. You know, it's just cluttered with stuff, and I always think, all right, what can I get rid of? And I look at something like, well, my wife gave me this. I don't want to throw it away, you know, or my mother gave me this or something like that. So it's not the thing. It's who gave it to you and why they gave it to you, right? And I think that's what Vicky is talking about here, where it's not the strawberries. It's the gift. It's the person that gave it to them, why they gave it to you. They gave it to you because they love you. But I do like the, you know, and she's so intent on that, she's looking at it. She's not just seeing strawberries. She's seeing heart-shaped. She's seeing the red, and she's seeing them as juicy, as something that's nourishing. But again, that first line of, he finds me strawberries in winter, offering them to me like diamonds, like, you know, here's this amazing thing that I'm giving to you because I love you. So a lot in a great little brevity. I enjoyed this one a lot. I thought this was fantastic. What did you think?
I enjoyed it as well. You know, strawberries in winter is kind of a rare thing. I mean, with globalization, you can get them shipped from anywhere, but to have, like, bright, juicy, fresh ones in winter, I mean, depending on where you live, I guess, that's difficult. I mean, strawberries are wonderful here in the summer, but by winter, you get the little grocery store ones that are all shriveled up. It's not the same. These look like wonderful ones. So that is like a diamond. It's you had to dig deep for that. You had to work at finding it. And when you do, it's special. And to offer them, to not have it yourself and give it to someone, it's an act of love. There's something sensual about the juiciness of the berries. So it emphasizes that love and the heart shape, like you said. That's something that clearly makes it seem like it's a romantic partner who's giving it. The symbolism of it, of giving someone something that is kind of invigorating, like the taste and the brightness. It's like that little bit of summer that you're giving someone on a cold day. It's like hope that you're giving out and joy. So I think this is beautiful, a nice response to the image that the hand is one that is giving.
Yes, and I'm going to give I really like obscure references. So there's a very, very obscure scene, but it always stuck out to me for some reason in The Godfather Part 2, believe it or not, where Robert De Niro is playing the Godfather in the old. So I don't know if anybody's ever seen that movie. They kind of go back and forth between time to the older Godfather and when he was younger. And when he was younger and Robert De Niro's playing him, he brings home a pair. It always struck me because it was just kind of a weird line to me where he brings a pair home. He's just carrying a pair home, and he puts a pair on the table. And his wife comes out and says, "Oh, my, what a lovely pair." And she's, like, all excited about this one pair that he brought home. And I just thought it was always such a strange line for some reason. But what I realized, those movies are about, they're about family. As much as he was a mobster, the Godfather, the main character, he was always about family. He didn't want to get into drugs, and he was all about just doing the family. And that's the very beginning of the first Godfather. I don't know if you're into those type of movies, Faziana, but at the very beginning of it, they're at a family party with a million people there, and everybody's there, and everybody's having a great time, and everybody's together. And by the end of the second one, Michael Corleone is alone, completely alone, because he's isolated or killed basically his entire family. And that's kind of what the movie is about, is this one guy who's doing this, who's really family-oriented, the father, and then the son who takes over and is the opposite and ends up just being, he's so egotistical and so into his own pride that he loses everything and loses sight of where he's going. So back to my obscure reference, that one line, which makes, you know, the genius is always in the details. That line is just showing that closeness and love with the family, where he brings home this just simple piece of fruit and she's all excited about it. And that's actually what came to mind here. So, obscure reference, but that whole kind of art. And I thought that was just a beautiful little story and a beautiful way to see it, Vicki. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I love that reference. I think it's good. It shows how food can be connected to family. And it so often is, you know. Like, we think of certain foods as, like, something that is related to your mother, your grandmother, a special holiday. Food is connected to memory very strongly. And in times where, fruit is scarce, I could be. Is The Godfather set like during the Depression? I know it's in the past. I'm trying to think.
I'm trying to think of it. I should know this. Pee Wee might know. He just said he's been watching those movies forever. I think the older Godfather, I think when he came over, is the beginning of the when like The Godfather first came over, so the older part of two, he was at like the turn of the century, and maybe the early 1910s, something like that, early 20s. And then later on, it's actually in, like, the 60s. So The Godfather and Godfather Part II are more in, like, the 60s, I believe. So,
okay.
But the early one is in parts of the Depression, yes, or right before the Depression, I believe, something like that. The you know, Part II when they're with the Robert De Niro part.
That's later on. Okay, I was just thinking, like, maybe it was a time when fruit was, like, a big deal to have. Like, you couldn't afford it. It can have that connection. And I actually thought of Firefly, which is one of my favorite shows, because they're in space in kind of like a post-apocalyptic type situation. And, you know, they eat the kind of stuff on the ship that's like, it's all canned and gross. And they're at a stop, and this person says, "I don't have any money, but will you let me on your ship?" And he opens up a container, and you can't see from the perspective of the viewers what he's holding up. And the girl who's the pilot is so excited, and she's like, yes, I'll take you. And then later on, she opens up the package that he had, and it's strawberries. And she's so excited that she's giving him free passage, like, across the galaxy for strawberries. It was just so cute.
You're like the third or fourth person that's been talking me into watching Firefly. I honestly haven't watched a TV show in years, just because I've been so busy. But my wife and I have been trying to relax more, so we've been watching shows. Right now we're watching this Goofy, but I'm really into it. It's been turning into so much fun. This show called Warehouse 13, which is actually kind of fun if you haven't seen it. It's on the Sci-Fi Network. And everybody I talk to say, you should watch Firefly. So that's my next show I'm going to do is I'm gonna do Firefly. Everyone keeps talking about it. Pee-wee just said, Wild West space show. Firefly is pretty cool. So
it is.
I'm apparently the only one who hasn't seen it yet, so I'm going to have to watch it.
It's a cult classic. There's only one
season.
All right,
I'm going to... And Pee-wee said he's going to rewatch the movies now. So sorry, Pee-wee, they're like 3.5 hours long. I just made you go watch a whole bunch more movies. So I should probably rewatch them too.
I did it all in one night because I wasn't allowed to watch them. I think I was like 11 when I did, and I was at a friend's house. And we had a sleepover, and we stayed up all night and watched all three.
Oh, really? You watched all three of them? Wow. They're really amazing movies. And if you're a George Lucas fan, I don't know if you know this, we're getting way off topic, but I guess that's okay. George Lucas was friends and just starting out. He actually did some of the filming on the original Godfather. He was the third director, you know, whatever. He did some of that. Like, there's a scene when Michael finds out that his father was shot, and they show him like look at a newspaper. So the hands of the newspaper. That when they show the scene of someone's hands opening a newspaper, George Lucas actually shot that. And I might be wrong, because I'm wrong a lot, but that actually might be George Lucas's hands as well, too. So if you're a Star Wars fan, George actually had a little bit of his say in The Godfather, believe it or not.
That's cool.
Pee-wee said, I didn't know that, yes. But I don't know if that was his hands, but I definitely know that he did some of the third shots on there. He was kind of... I'm spacing the director's name, and I can't believe I'm doing that. Coppola, Francis Ford Coppola, took him under his wing a little bit. Read about American Zoetrope, which is Francis Ford Coppola's production company. It's the very first movie they made was THX-1138, Lucas's student film that they made into a real film, starring Robert Duvall, believe it or not. It's a very, you would never think that the same person that made Star Wars made this movie. It's a sci-fi apocalyptic movie, and it's really interesting. I highly recommend watching THX-1138 if anyone, no one's ever done that, which was produced by Francis Ford Coppola under his, Anyway, all right. Enough geeking out, which you and I seem to do a lot of Asiana on these shows, is
pretty
geek
much my
out
life.
On things. There you go.
But let's geek out over poetry now.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, why don't you read Microcosm?
Hey, I would. And which prompt is this one for?
The strawberries again.
Oh, the strawberries again. Excellent. I would be happy to read this. This is Microcosm by Marahartha Lani, 1848. I'm not sure where she is from, but appreciate her writing. Microcosm. Tomatoes pulsing warmly in the hands, prepared with thumbs, exposing chambered seeds, red strawberries adorned with shiny beads, and pomegranates brought from far-off lands. When nestled in one's palms, one understands there is a universe contained in these, of burning atoms roped in galaxies, creating patterns through divine commands. When comes the day that I can only muse on the theology of some high place, with distant purple hues to make one gasp, then I will focus down on nearer views, where one may find, when fingers interlace, they hold the heart of God within their grasp. End poem. Wow, this one almost gave me some chills here. She actually wrote, what she said was she wrote a Petrarchan sonnet, which the rhyme is A-B-B-A-A-B-B-A-C-D-E-C-D-E. I'm not familiar with that specific form of poetry, but it's very interesting, and I think she did a great job with it. But really, I mean, she went to some real depths here, which I just loved, where she's I liked thinking of the strawberries as something from far off lands. I thought that was really interesting, and because we do think of that, we just go to the store and just buy things, right? But you know, some of the stuff we have is from all the way across the world. You know, I'm in New England here. We don't grow bananas here. You know, they come from tropical places. You know, and sometimes we just assume we just go to the store and get bananas and don't take into consideration of where they're actually coming from. And then taking those strawberries and just seeing that there's a whole universe within there, right? That they're made of the same things that everything else is made of. I just thought was really interesting. So she's just taking the strawberries as a microcosm of everything, of the one. I mean, we are all the same. You know, if you, you know, I'm going to use another obscure movie reference. So if you've ever seen the movie Phenomenon, where the lead character gets this, he gets this kind of, I don't want to ruin the story for anybody, but he ends up with these powers where his mind is just doing things nobody else can do. And he's describing that he ends up being able to like move things with his mind. And he says, how do you do that? Well, I just ask it to do it. How can you do that? He says, well, we're all made of the same stuff, energy, you know, so we just connect with it. And, you know, I think that's what she's getting at, is that you look at this and it's just a microcosm of the whole universe, which is amazing that she saw that, this picture, and went that deep and took that out of it. So fantastic. And another brevity. We are flowing beautifully with brevities tonight, but beautiful, beautiful. And I would love now, as a librarian and what I consider a word and poetry and literature expert, I would love to hear your take on this and on the style that she did here, Afasiana.
I really like the style, the Italian sonnet. I personally am terrible at working within that specific structure because, you know, you have to have your iambic pentameter, have your sounds just right with your meter, and you have to have the rhyming work, and it's tough to do. I'm terrible at it, but I think that Marahartha Lani did an amazing job. Really good. I didn't count the syllables, but it had that kind of flow where it just naturally felt like it was right, in a way that people who are good at meter make it sound like it's just so natural, even though it's actually quite difficult to do. And the rhymes worked out really nice. I liked that rhyme scheme. I thought that the red strawberries adorned with shiny beads was really cool. It's a way of talking about the way that the seeds make it look. And the choice of the other red fruits, tomatoes for some reason have like a bloodiness to them in my mind. Like there's like the way that they ooze. But then pomegranates are very sensual. You know, with the story in Greek mythology and the pomegranate being something that was the temptation that made her have to stay. So having all that held in your palms and it representing so much more. Now, the last line I've very much enjoyed, even though I'm not a religious person myself, I loved when fingers interlace, they hold the heart of God within their grasp. The idea that the strawberry is the heart of God because it holds all of that, the divineness of nature, is such a strong interpretation of the image to use that strawberry in the hand as a microcosm, and an apt title as well. Wonderful.
It really was. And we've had some fantastic poetry tonight. Now, how many more do we have left? If I stop talking about movies, do you think we can get in the rest of them? I'm not sure what we have
I
left
I think
here.
So. We have three more for this contest. So.
Oh, really? Wow.
And one of
okay.
them, one of them is mine, so that's not as urgent. We're now on prompt 5, which some people interpreted as a firework. I saw it as a dandelion, so we will find out. How people felt about it. We actually have an audio for Colap for this next one, so I'm going to play that. This is by Colap.
Nostalgos by Colap. The abyss offers itself gaping, sitting at its edge, gazing it, yearning. I throw in objects, cheap or expensive, into it.
Sorry, this is not the right sound clip. Okay, we're just going to have to read it.
I think so. Whose turn is it?
Sorry about that. All right, so The Last Firework by Colap. A single stem alone in the teal of night, billowing in the wind. She's on her last thread. At the end of her metamorphosis, her mane now just a sparse cotton fluff strewn in the air, but she will go with a bang, like a monochrome firework to commemorate this lovely tableau that's been her life. End poem.
Great read there, and I'm not sure where Co-op lives in France, so she's in France, another country you heard from today, and she says what the name means in Cambodian, so she might have some Cambodian roots there. Great read with that, and you know I can see where people are getting fireworks from, just the way that this art is made here. I really enjoyed this painting, and it does to me. I think it is dandelion, but it's you can see where it's kind of firework, and I think she has a lot of metaphors here. So you know, a single stem. So I think she's seeing it as a dandelion seed, you know, blowing in the wind, but saying it as like a monochrome firework, which is interesting because the painting. I think this is a painting of the artist's is really just black and white, and she had mentioned in her SoundCloud that she really likes black and white. It's just black background with the different shades of white for the dandelion, and kind of wish he went with this where, you know, personifying the dandelion seed, what I'm getting from it, of her last thread, the end of her metamorphosis, right? This is the end. So a dandelion grows up, and they're dandelions, and they come to the seed. And now just sparse cotton fluff thrown into the air. But she'll go with a bang because, you know, that's how her life's going to be. Monochrome firework, it looks like. So if you really look at it that way, my wife always had a really interesting way. She pointed out to me a long time ago once, the way she saw trees was like fire, where, you know, if you look at fire and it's kind of sprouting out in all these little fractal ways, and she sees trees almost as coming the same way, and when they move and crackle in the wind, it's like fire. And I always thought that was an interesting way to see that, and to be able to see this as like a firework exploding, right? If you were to watch maybe a fast forward film of a dandelion seed, it might look like fireworks exploding. You know, it might look like fast forward of that might look like fireworks exploding in slow motion. So another brevity. Brevity seemed to be the style tonight, and a fantastic job with a lot in this. I thought it was great. You did an awesome read as always, Fasia, and I could listen to you talk all day. What did you think of the poem?
I really loved it. I like that she took both the firework and the dandelion view. It's kind of the middle ground. Got the best of both. I like that she talked about it as the last thread, the end, because it is for the dandelion. And I like that it's described as her mane is now just a sparse cotton fluff, because it starts off with quite the mane, and dandelions are used as maned creatures in a few different things. In Alice in Wonderland, they kind of look like lions, and they have like the little face in the middle with the mane around, and then that mane is now, falling apart. Really interesting. I like the tableau that has been her life. Very, very beautiful. And I mean, like, you can see a little bit of collapsed French influence using tableau. But I believe she was originally from, oh, now I forget. It's another country. I was going to say Philippines, but it's not. But she has quite an interesting background of moving around. So she has influences from all over in her writing, which is really cool. I thought this was beautiful.
Absolutely, yes. And you know, I haven't thought. I was just starting to look at that for some reason, Fasiana. And isn't it incredible the coming together of countries and cultures that we have on all of these shows? It's not just this one. It's pretty much all of the All Poetry Society. I think it's just one of the positive things of the modern world and of this technology is the world being able to come together for such a positive thing as celebrating art and poetry. I think that's one of the amazing things about this site.
I agree.
And these shows.
It was funny because my mom found out I was doing these shows. She thought we were doing it live all from in the same room. And so she's asking, well, what kind of coffee did Dex have? Or I don't know. Like, it was some question like that. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, Mom, he lives in St. Paul. And she was like, and you go all the way there? I'm like, no. we have people from all over the world calling, and she's just like baffled, like, wow, I thought this was just a little thing you were doing like down the street. I'm like, no.
Oh.
It was just so cute. Like, you go all the way to St. Paul to see Dexter? No. I've never seen him in person.
Yes. Interesting. Cool. And do we have one more that wrote for the contest, I think?
We do. So it's by Michael G., and I've put that up on the board for you to read.
Absolutely. Let me get to that right now. And I apologize. I have like 17 screens up, and none of them for some reason have that here. Yeah, Robbie said that would be dedication. It would be. We should start doing that, just flying every week to meet each other somewhere. If we were multi-zillionaires, maybe we could do that.
All right, if you'll pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Robbie, you want to foot the bill? We'll do it. So Michael G., this is called Firework, and Michael is from Florida, our possibly last poem for the night. Firework. Plume of blue, heads heavenward with drabness. I climb behind the thrust, but vapid interest undoes my rise. No crescendo, at apex I am vexed. There's loneliness in the blue of brilliance. Apotheosis is up in the air. The epitome of climax. Food the artifice ascendancy. Unceremoniously, food the artifice. No luminescence to my reached apogee. At the height of heights, I have instead reaped rock bottom, plume of blue, just a trick of the light, no high-rise combustible to brighten the night, only a blue dandelion crying in a field of emptiness, all by its lonesome. End poem. And I realized a little while ago that I was honestly trying to be to be polite and let you think about these ahead of time, but I think I was not being polite and I was not letting you go first as a lady should be able to go first every time. So I apologize for that, Faziana, but give you the honor of going first for the last poem we have here.
Thank you. I thought this was beautiful. That again, it's combining the fireworks and the flowers. I like that it went to a sadness to it, because that's not usually what you think of with fireworks. Usually it's like this brilliance of celebration. But there's a loneliness in this blue, and I can see that in the picture, how it would be interpreted that way. And when it has the dandelion crying, those little bits that are falling off, whether it's a firework that is fizzling out or a dandelion that is drifting away, it does relate to tears. In a field of emptiness, all by its lonesome, it's not the big finale where there's tons of fireworks. There's just the one. There's just that one flower that's falling apart. I like that it kind of played on words, because fe deltifis, ascendancy, fe is fire, and then unceremoniously fo deltifis. So it goes from fire to fake, and it sounds very similar, but it's different. So from fire to fake, within that section, it looks like it's a firework, but it's not. It's just a fake. So there's something really interesting about the way that was worded, and that it's a plume of blue is just very well said. Wonderful wording, Michael G. What did you think, Dan?
I agree, and there is a little, for those of you looking at the picture, there's a hint of blue. The black is almost an extremely dark blue in the background, and you can almost see a hint of blue if you look at it. So it was interesting they did that, and just a great description. I was looking for some ones that were true descriptions of the art, and I thought this was fantastic. I'm glad that we did have one. Describe that lone dandelion as kind of crying in a field of emptiness all by its lonesome, I thought was really interesting and beautifully done. And seeing it as sad, you know, what he got out of the painting was loneliness. You know, other people were getting, fireworks and excitement where they're just seeing that loneliness. And you can see that sometimes in paintings or pictures or whatever, where there's a lot of black and then just one or a lot of one monochrome color and then something else as well too. So, you know, black and white can do that sometimes. It can get that loneliness depending on how it's done. So, I thought this is very, very interesting. It's a great job, Michael. And again, I want to thank the artist for collaborating with us on this and being involved. It was very exciting for us. Her name is, I'm going to mispronounce it wrong, I apologize, but Noemia Prada, I believe. So if you go to noemiapradia.com, NoemiaPrada.com, you can check out all of her stuff. She does also have things, she's on LinkedIn as well as Instagram, I know that. And you can also look for her on Amazon and other places that sell books. If you do reach out to her, mention that you heard about her on the show, it would be great. We don't get any money for it. I just thought it would be nice to, you know, to have that collaboration. But thanks again, Noemia, for your collaboration. This is a lot of fun. And definitely, as always, well-deserved, since this is your show, you get the last word. And I think you have already the show up for the next one, up the contest, as well as you already posted for your Sinner Saint show. Is that correct?
I did. So there is a contest right now that is about different snowmen and their expressions and how that will, you choose which one represents you in winter. So we have 1 minute. I'm going to throw in my poem inspired by the thing, by the art,
oh, cool.
the same image. Dandelion Dust. Dandelion Dust, capturing the circle of life, aged and infancy. Only in death can motherhood bloom, the next generation her halo. As the angel takes wing, ashes like a firework, rain tomorrow shine, a chalk outline of birth. And poem.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I apologize. I'm glad we got yours in there. So I'm sorry if I didn't mean to cut you off on that. Boy, I was so rude. I was so rude tonight. I cut you off there. I was like making noise. I didn't have you do it. I'm so sorry. I was a horrible host tonight.
You were
I hope
awesome.
You invite me back next time.
I will for sure.
I appreciate
and
that.
In half an hour we have Pam and I believe Rex. So stay tuned. Or actually, it's on the late night channel, but stay in Late Night Poet. And check out my show tomorrow night, The Late Show, part sinner, part saint. Thank you, everyone.